Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Da-da-da-da, it's the podcast starting, the podcast is starting! Hey, everybody, welcome to the Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
The podcast has begun.
I don't know why, but I got the final countdown stuck in my head just now.
It just reminds me of Arrested Development.
Because it was like the countdown to the start. It's the final countdown. Yep,
it's so that happens. That's, yeah, and again, that's the episode.
That's just how my brain works. Just for no reason, that song said jump in there.
It's a good song. Mm-hmm. Every time I listen to it, it's the perfect mix of super cheesy, and it actually gets you going.
It gets you going.
Maybe we should listen to that before we do our workouts.
That's the one. Yeah, we'll have to touch on that later.
Yeah.
But it's a sad day, Jimmy.
It is a sad day.
It's a sad, sad day.
It's Tuesday.
Wait. Are we in the future or the past? Because it's not actually Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. I would say the future. It is a sad day because our editor, Eli Cuevas, is moving on.
He has graduated or something. And yeah,
he went infinite and he's done infinite. With Commander.
Yeah. So Eli, who also works at and for Rocket Jump, has just been super busy doing all the cool stuff that Rocket Jump's doing, including Rocket Jump the Show, which you should check out on Hulu. So Eli's just hasn't had the amount of time to do the show. I mean, he's still been doing it, but it's just like we get now last time, like 4 a.m. was when I got the thing from him, the like final audio for me to check.
Yeah.
So that was like, oh, man. So Eli's done such a great job. I edited the show until episode 10. And then, except for maybe once or twice, Eli has edited every episode since then. So something like 70 episodes of the show.
Back in the early days, he said he would cut out all the silences between the... we would talk and then keep going, and he would cut all those out. And
yeah, that stopped a while ago.
Fortunately, we've just, instead of actually saying, we just roll over with words that don't make sense sometimes. We just talk through it.
Well, and the big thing is the video, too. That takes a lot of time. If you haven't checked out the video on YouTube... go to youtube.com/...
The Command Zone Podcast.
That's what I was going to say. And I'm like, what is... Oh, crap.
Oh, crap.
And you can see, like, every card is shown. There's an animated background.
Yeah.
We've got nice text graphics. You know, if we're talking about something else, he might put a photo up. Like, there's a... And the episodes are an hour plus, so that's just a ton of work that Eli's been doing twice a week for a while there. So, Eli, we're going to miss you, pal. I'm sure that the listeners will miss you and the watchers, and but we have a new guy.
Woohoo!
So starting with this episode, we have Terry.
Hey, so instead of hey Eli, you need to cut that out. We're going to say hey Terry.
Hey Terry. So hey Terry, welcome aboard. Good
welcome
luck.
Welcome aboard.
We're all counting on you.
Yeah, we're going to say some really weird names in this episode, and we're not going to tell you what they are. I'm just kidding.
And, you know, if we screw up, like, a rules interaction or something, Terry, I expect you to fix that.
That's right. Terry, what format does Terry play?
I don't know. He wasn't familiar with Commander, but he does play Magic.
Well,
so.
Yeah, no one's familiar with Commander until you really dive in, right?
But Terry's in Indiana right now, but he's actually moving out to L.A. in, like, 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh,
so
perfect.
Don't worry, we'll get him into Commander.
Excellent.
But he does know Magic, so he is familiar with a lot of the cards.
Yeah.
So that'll help.
Not many editing positions have the tagline of, you must know how to play Magic the Gathering.
This is true. Yeah. So, now that was the sad part. Now we have the happy part.
The happy part is we have a contest, and oh my gosh, we had a ton of new submissions this week. It was awesome.
There was a lot of names I didn't recognize.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of submissions in total.
And people saying, like, this is the first time I've submitted to a contest. Like, this is the first contest since I started listening to the show, which makes me super happy.
Yeah, it also means we haven't had a contest in a while. So this is awesome. We're going to announce the winners near the end of the show.
Yep.
So if you tweeted at us, emailed us, we even took the submissions off the YouTube comments and such, you will have a chance to win.
Yeah.
But you'll have to listen till the end or skip ahead now and check and see if you won and then come back.
But don't, because today's main topic is a fun one. We are talking about Metamai the Ageless and the deck that the Community Cup made, or the community made during the Community Cup this year.
By community, Jimmy means him.
Yeah, me, Joel Larson, and Wedge from the Mana Source teamed up to make a Commander deck for the first time ever at the Community Cup. So we're going to deck tech that and talk about how to build with flavor, I guess, a little bit. And also, like, how we were terrified to put in, like, we did not put in Path to the Exile in that deck.
Yeah, because you had to be on flavor, so yeah. That was the biggest part. The way the scoring worked was there was 15 points available, 5 points from three different judges
yep.
that would judge you on flavor. And then the match itself, when you played the game, was what? You could only...
3 points.
3 points if you win the match.
Yeah, so it was very important to get the flavor right. But, of course, we wanted to make the deck at least be able to win the match as well. And that we did, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But
Well, the great thing about this, and the unique thing for the first time ever on the Command Zone, we're going to deck tech a deck, and you can actually go and watch the video of it being played.
Yeah, that's actually really cool.
Yeah, so that's never happened before, so... We'll give you all that information in the show notes. We'll probably announce it here after we talk about it, just so you can go find it. And the game was pretty awesome. And you can also, yep. after that match, you can hear Jimmy pontificate about it for about 20 minutes to the judges, which is also a fun part of the watch.
Yeah, far too long.
No, it worked. It worked.
Yeah,
it was a good strategy.
It was on flavor, right?
Yeah.
I was taking extra turns and describing what the deck was all about. So at the Community Cup this year, they had Iron Root Chef, which is a mainstay of the Community Cup, which is a competition that is also run by Nate Holt over Twitter. Very often he announces the new people that are going to be in it. And it's about building a flavorful deck against another flavorful deck. And it's all about the flavor. It's not about making a competitive, like, strong deck or whatever. It's about making the most flavorful deck based on a key ingredient. So it's like
Iron Chef. Yep.
Yeah, but Iron Root, because Iron Root, whatever. That
Iron Root Tree Folk.
Tree Folk, yeah, was one of those original cards back in the day. So at the Community Cup this year, we were given a key ingredient to a deck, and we had to build around that. And so in this case, they offered up five different commanders that we could build from. And they were Kervek the Merciless, Metamai the Ageless, Radha, Heir to Keld, Ramirez de Pietro, and Safi Eriksdotter.
So just for fun, let's read these, the five choices, just so people who aren't familiar know what each one was.
Definitely.
So Kervek the Merciless is five and Rakdos, so five a black and a red, for a 5/4 legendary creature, human shaman. Kervek says, whenever an opponent casts a spell, Kervek deals damage to target creature or player equal to that spell's converted mana cost.
Whoa.
So he was one of the choices.
Yeah, and then we won't talk about Metamai right now, but we had Radha, Heir to Keld. She is a legendary creature elf warrior 2/2 that costs Gruul, so red and green. Whenever Radha, Heir to Keld attacks, you may add red to your mana pool, and you can also tap her to add green to your mana pool. So she's like a supreme mana dork. Whenever she taps, she's going to add mana.
The third choice was Safi, Eriksdotter. Safi costs just 2 mana. Celestia, is that Celestia? Yes, a green and a white.
Yeah.
So Safi's a 2 mana 2/2. She's a bear. Legendary creature, human scout. You can sacrifice Safi and then... Let me read the oracle. That's worded weird. Okay, sacrifice Safi. When target creature is put into your graveyard from the battlefield this turn... Return that card to the battlefield. So if when your creature is about to die, you can basically make Safi die instead of it.
Yep.
But it also does go to the graveyard and come back, so it'll double up enter the battlefield effects and whatnot. Cool card.
Very cool.
We haven't talked about Safi a lot, but I have her in a lot of decks, and she's very useful in the 99.
Yeah, and she's essentially saving someone. She's
right.
Sacrificing herself. And then there is Ramirez de Pietro, who is a very flamboyant pirate. He costs 3 blue-black-black, so 6 total for a legendary creature human pirate, and he has first strike as a 4/3.
So if you listened last week, you'll know that this is the commander that the Wizards team chose.
Correct.
You guys actually got to choose first.
Yeah, and everyone was thinking, you guys should totally take Ramirez de Pietro. Like, look at the flavor. It's a pirate. It's a flamboyant pirate, and it's like it's oozing with flavor, and
it's
we decided not
flavor.
To.
Easy flavor.
Yeah, it's
easy. We talked about this before. To me, it's if you look at a card and immediately know what you're supposed to do, then that's inherently easier than a card like all the rest of them where you're like, you have to think about it for a second and be like, what do I do with that?
Yeah, also, the colors weren't that good for us. We wanted to... One of the original ideas when we were like, we should take Ramirez was we need to do the Princess Bride story.
Right.
And unfortunately, blue and black doesn't really lend itself to having princesses or...
You need white in there somewhere.
Yeah, you need white in there and some other stuff. So we decided to go with Metamai, which was Joel Larson's first pick. Pro Tour champion, Joel Larson, we should clarify. Red deck wins, by the way. He played mono red all the way. So you go, bro. So That's why we didn't take Ramirez first, and we took Metamai the Ageless, and I'll read him now. It's 4 blue white for a 4/4 legendary creature Sphinx Flying. Whenever Metamai the Ageless deals combat damage to a player, take an extra turn after this one. Metamai the Ageless can't attack during extra turns. So clearly the power level's up there. You get extra turns, turn shenanigans. So we chose Metamai because we thought that the flavor, it was complicated, right? At first glance, it was like that thing. It was like, oh yeah, just make an extra turns deck. But the reason that we chose to take Metamai is because it was the challenge of building a deck that wasn't just about extra turns and where the extra flavor lay beyond that.
Right. So this, we haven't really done a flavor deck on the show before, so this is going to be really interesting and cool to go through. And just keep in mind, as we're talking about cards, the goal of this deck is not to create the most powerful deck or to, you know, the goal of this deck is to make sure that every card within it is on flavor, is on theme, has to do with Metamai, and, you know, that's why we were talking earlier, and you couldn't put Path to Exile in this deck.
Yeah, although you totally would in a normal deck. You would put Sol Ring and Gilded Lotus and all those cards in there, but we did not put any of those in this deck because every single card needed to be specifically flavorful to Metamai. And
what a fun and awesome way to build a deck. One, we haven't talked about much, but I would encourage people out there to give it a shot. I mean, even if you're spiky or whatever, it can be fun to have one deck or a couple decks within your repertoire that are just for flavor. It's just like, that just make people laugh. You know, when we had BDM on, he talked about a deck that was all had to do with crime, you know, syndicates or whatever, it was like murder, and it was like, you know, every card in there. And that can be a really cool deck, especially if you pull it out, start playing with it, and don't say anything, and somebody else notices. So,
also, you get flavor wins, and those are by far some of the most satisfying wins you can get, which is great. Because there were a couple of points when Yoel played the deck against Robert Schuster on the Wizard side that everyone was like, whoa, that's really flavorful and very powerful. That's the nice thing is when you get to combine flavor and power. And that's what we were aiming to do with this deck specifically. This deck is also slightly edged to be better for 1v1, and that was kind of a spiky choice on our end because we wanted to get those extra 3 points.
Yeah, it's smart.
And it's pretty crazy. We only had an hour to build it, and Metamai has a story behind him. So very quickly, Metamai is from Theros block, and he is an ageless oracle that comes to the citizens of Miletus at times of sort of great historical events. So either like great religious ceremonies or right before the beginning of a war, sort of stuff like that, he'll come and prophesy some stuff. He speaks in riddles, he gives choices, and he's a prophet that can control time. So we definitely started with this, and that's where we went for it. We just were like, let's tell this story, and let's make sure every card that we choose highlights one of these sort of four aspects of Metamai.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to note, or I guess important to note, that he's a Greek Sphinx, which is not the exact same thing as an Egyptian Sphinx. Even though Yoel Larson was dressed as an Egyptian, but there was some cards where I was surprised they weren't in there, but then when I learned, oh, he's a Greek Sphinx, well, you can't put in some of the things. So
yeah, exactly,
that makes sense too. The first category, this is the most obvious one,
mastering time.
Mastering time.
It's
would you say he's like the master of the universe?
He is a master of the universe indeed. We didn't want to make the entire deck about extra turns because that would just be, you know, it's part of his flavor, but that's not what he's all about.
But it'd be weird to have none.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be weird to have none. So we chose to put in cards like Temporal Manipulation. And it was really important that the name, either the name or the flavor text, was really flavorful to the commander.
Mm-hmm.
So Temporal Manipulation is exactly what Metamai kind of has power over. And it's basically just 3 blue sorcery, take an extra turn after this one. And I love the flavor text. Doing something at the last minute isn't so bad when you can make that minute last, which is great.
And all these, I mean, we don't have to read each one, but Time Warp, Temporal Mastery, that's one of the newer ones. That's the Delve one, right?
Yes.
Time Stretch, they all just give extra turns. Some give 2 extra turns. This last one's interesting because it's not actually a spell that does it.
Oh, no, Temporal Mastery isn't the new one, actually. I'm sorry. It's the Miracle one.
Oh, that's the Miracle one, yes. I'm thinking of Temporal Distortion.
It's temporal something. Extortion? No.
Temporal distortion? Extortion is
temporal
a great name
cascade,
for a card.
Temporal cascade, temporal aperture, temporal manipulation, temporal isolation, temporal mastery.
Which one has delve on it? It's all temporal.
Everything's temporal.
At least it's not temperamental.
Yeah, that's right.
My internet is
temporal trespass.
Temporal Trespass, right.
Yeah, so Temporal Trespass we didn't put in because it has Liliana on the art.
Oh, yeah, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, and the delve mechanic is cool, but, like, we wanted to make sure, like, if we did that, we definitely would have gotten called out on it.
Yeah, because delve has nothing to do with what he's doing either.
Yeah,
so.
It's more of a, it's not really, yeah. So we didn't put Temporal Trespass in.
Okay, well, let's talk about this last one, though. Lighthouse Chronologist.
Lighthouse Chronologist.
Because I'm curious how that fits into the flavor.
Well, so one of the big things that we wanted to make sure that we highlighted was that Metamai isn't just by himself. There are people on the ground that need to, like, interpret his riddles or be sort of the same in the universe of being able to take extra turns. And Lighthouse Chronologist was a creature that was someone, like, if you look at the art, he's looking out, you know, at the lighthouse. He's sort of like someone that is waiting to see a sign, kind of. He's able to interpret the signs. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So as someone in a lighthouse, we thought that was really matching sort of what Metamai did.
All right, I buy it.
Also, the card's really good.
Well, we knew that part.
Yeah, we also had Time Stretch in there, and I believe... No, not Time Stretch. I'm sorry. We had a Time Reversal, and that's in the next section, which is Messing with Time. So Metamai not only is able to take extra turns, we wanted to do stuff that kind of changed the way the game...
The rules of the game, yeah. I like this section a lot.
Yeah, this is definitely what made the game so crazy when we played it. Time Reversal, if you guys watch our videos, this is the first animation that pops up by Jeffrey Palmer, is a 3 blue-blue sorcery. Each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into his or her library, then draws 7 cards. Exile Time Reversal.
It's time... What's the Power 9 card that this is the equivalent of, just cost more? It's not Time Walk. Time Twister.
Time Twister, yeah.
Yes. So it's basically a fair version of Time Twister.
Yeah, and this kind of card has been printed actually a couple of times before. The art is so great on this. It's like a single dude in the middle of the universe, and he's conquering
the master
time.
Of the universe.
Master of the
that's
universe.
What I'm saying. That's Metamai.
Metamai is the master of the universe.
Yeah, very cool card, right on flavor. The next one caused a lot of craziness in the game you guys played. It's called Sands of Time. Sands of Time is a 4-drop artifact. It says each player skips his or her untap step. So you don't get an untap step. That's like stasis. Mm-hmm. But then it says, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player simultaneously untaps each tapped artifact, creature, and land he or she controls, and then taps each untapped artifact, creature, and land he or she controls. So on your untap step, if stuff's tapped, it untaps. But if it's untapped, it taps.
Right.
So you're kind of incentivized to tap out so that it will untap.
Now, back in the day, there was mana burn. So if you were like, oh, I'm going to trick this and tap all my mana in response to this trigger, and then it'll untap all my lands, that mana would hurt you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that doesn't happen anymore.
But it isn't always easy to tap your creatures.
Right.
So, most of the time, to tap the creatures, you have to attack. And sometimes you don't want to because they'll block.
Yep.
So it can get you in sort of weird binds where, like, well, I didn't want to attack, so that just tapped him basically until next turn.
Yeah. And one of the big things we liked was giving the opponent the illusion of choice.
Right.
And yourself, too. So it's like, if you want to untap your creatures, they will have to swing. But that's a choice you have to make. And is it the right choice? Who knows? Sands of Time, I don't think we actually fully thought out how crazy this was going to make the game. Because when it hit the board, it was actually stolen by the pirate deck. Very flavorful. They took the Sands of Time. Because also, Ramirez de Pietro is, like, ageless as well. You don't know his age. So having the Sands of Time...
Of course, he's stealing something that screws with time, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that caused a lot of mayhem. And it was great because it totally is what we wanted to make the flavor of the deck was, which was mess with the rules of the game. Untapped steps now become this crazy, weird thing that don't exist anymore. And everyone has to, like, switch what's tapped and untapped. And it also...
I have this in my Chaos deck. We've played
a
few times.
Oh, geez. Thank God. I've never seen this on the table. I would be a little...
It just gets confusing because everyone's like, wait, what do I have to do? And you're like, just everything that's right now tapped, untap it,
yeah,
and then do the
flip
reverse.
It around.
Yeah.
We also had Time Stop, which just says end the turn as an instant, which is great. And
that's actually a really powerful effect.
Yeah, right? It's exactly what Metamai would want to do, which is just be like, stop everything now. I have the power to just say no.
He does the Professor X thing.
Yeah. Everything goes, and then you go to the next turn.
Oh, here's another temporal card, Temporal Distortion.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 3-2 blue for an enchantment. Whenever a creature or land becomes tapped, you put an hourglass counter on it. And then each permanent that has an hourglass counter on it doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, remove all hourglass counters from permanents that player controls. So what happens is basically your stuff untaps every other turn.
Yeah. And you choose if you want it to untap. Right. That card is brutal, actually. It's a weird stasis
effect. I have it in
effect.
My stasis deck. Yeah. It certainly slows down the game. You guys didn't get it out in your game, so.
No, we didn't, but we did get Paradox Haze out, which is...
Those cards are actually awesome.
Yeah, 2 in a blue, Enchantment Aura, Enchant Player. At the beginning of Enchant Player's first upkeep each turn, that player gets an additional upkeep step after this turn. So this is really messing with time, because we also had cards with Suspend in here. And Suspend is a mechanic that when you cast it, you put like time counters on it, and every time you have an upkeep, you remove a counter from it. So this lets you remove things twice as many times. It also, if you have like two expensive instants in your hand, lets you cast both of them, because you get a...
With Sands of Time, it does. What happens with Sands of Time is you get to untap on both upkeeps, so it actually gives you two untap steps. Without Sands of Time, it wouldn't do that. But Paradox Haze wouldn't do that. But with Sands of Time, that's a very potent combo. And the great thing about it is it doesn't matter whose Sands of Time it is.
Yeah, you're getting it
so
anyway.
So when they stole Sands of Time from you, it still worked with the Paradox Haze out, which basically meant two untap steps.
Yeah.
Only to cast... instance though it doesn't work or instant speed stuff it doesn't work for sorcery speed stuff because you're still in your upkeep step. Paradox Haze is very powerful. We talked about it for the Joyra deck. Any deck that's doing stuff during its upkeep, Paradox Haze is great.
Yeah, you want it, having double upkeep was really cool, just watching some of the stuff that happened. But it also, as you guys will see when we talk about the match more, drain the clock a ton. Next category we have is called Speaking in Riddles. So, you know, as any kind of sage or, you know, person that comes to be an oracle for people, they don't just come and be like, this is going to happen. This is what you need to do. In Greek mythology, a lot of it is about, you know, delivering the message, but that's kind of veiled and you have to figure out what the exact meaning is and what you get from it. So we had a few cards in here that specifically dealt with that. Omen Speaker was one. It's a two drop that comes in and scries two immediately, but it's from Theros block. And we thought, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had actual Theros cards in here because the flavor is just everywhere in these cards, and the art and the text.
Right. The Omen Speaker makes sense though, because that's probably somebody who would hear one of Metamize's riddles and be like, I've solved it. This is what it is.
Yeah. And the, you know, the idea of scrying two is exactly what you want to be doing. That card I bet was busted and limited. That card's sweet.
It was good. It wasn't busted, but it was
Scry 2 is pretty good.
Yeah, it was a strong card. I don't think it was a first pick or anything. Yeah. The next one is Seagate Oracle.
This card's amazing.
2 in a blue for a 1/3 wizard. When Seagate Oracle enters the battlefield, look at the top two cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the other on the bottom of your library. So
yeah,
it's even better than Scry 2 because you look at two cards and then you just take one into your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Seagate, we like the idea of these people being close to the water because Miletus is on the shore, sort of. So that also helped out making sure that, you know, having our characters in the story of Metamai were also by the ocean. We also had Riddle Keeper and Riddle Smith. And these are cards that aren't necessarily that great. Riddle Keeper is a homunculus. Whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, that creature's controller puts the top two cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So not a very powerful card, but flavor-wise, it's great. Fools surrender their sanity to his riddles. Even greater fools try to solve them.
So. Yeah, so it could be talking about Metamai even. The Riddlesmith is 1 in a blue for a 2/1 artificer human. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card.
Yeah.
Funny thing is, you don't have a lot of artifacts in the deck, but does it matter? Because it's the Riddlesmith.
He's the Riddlesmith, yeah. Yeah. If we were trying to build an artifact deck, and sure, he'd go in there. But again, like we were more about the idea of his what he does. The fact that he, you know, Metamai, the other thing is like he doesn't just go to Miletus. He goes everywhere. He is ageless. He can go wherever the heck he wants. He can probably planeswalk. Who knows?
I don't think he officially has his spark.
Not yet.
Maybe someday.
Yeah, but that'd be sweet. I would totally play that card if I had a spark. Take extra turns. Oh my gosh, yes, please. If there's anything like Ralzeric, I'm all in. The next section is one of my favorites. It's giving opponents choices. Now, if this was to be a 1000% flavorful, every time you gave an opponent a choice, it should be able to like directly benefit them. But cards in Magic aren't necessarily built that way. You can't, you know, if that was the case, then this deck would not be very powerful because every time you gave someone a choice, they could just actively screw you over, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there are some cards that have things that are similar to this, but the card that really sort of headed off this whole section was Factor Fiction. And I don't know if you guys have played Factor Fiction before, but...
Yeah, it's a very good card. I'm sure a lot of people have.
It is a very good card. So Fact or Fiction... is a instant for 3 in a blue. Reveal the top 5 cards of your library. An opponent separates those cards into 2 piles. Put one into your hand and the other into your graveyard. So it's great. It draws you a ton of cards sometimes, but it also forces someone to make a choice, and
they're like choosing their future.
Yeah, exactly. And they have to, you get to choose which one you eventually take, but they're the ones that have to separate the piles. And there's usually a correct way of separating them, so that, you know, you'll do like four lands and then one spell or something, so that you don't just give them a sweet deal.
Yeah.
You could also just do all five cards in one pile and zero in the next, which is an option, which is crazy. But you are making the choice, and you can totally mess up. I've messed up on Factor Fictions before, and it really punishes you because you put the wrong cards in the same pile, and the person's like, I'm definitely taking that one.
Right. Well, it's also the kind of card where we've seen this happen where you do it to your ally in the game, and they just give you all five cards.
Yeah, and that's super intense. Actually, this is something that I think is great in EDH. I really like Factor Fiction because it also gives a reason for someone else to swing at someone else if they like do something that are like, oh, why'd you do that? Like, oh, swing at you. And you're still the, I drew three cards.
Right, right, exactly. I drew the cards, but that person got hit for giving them all to me.
Yeah.
This next one's, you know, I haven't played with this card, but this card's actually very good. It's 4 mana for an artifact. It's called Thrawn Tome. You pay 5 and tap the Thrawn Tome. Reveal the top 3 cards of your library. Target opponent chooses one of those cards. You put that card into the graveyard, and then you draw 2 cards. So they choose which card you don't get of the 3.
Which is great. You're always getting 5 mana,
draw 2, just like repeatable, is pretty great.
Yeah, and you always get 2, which is nice. Thrawn Tome is cool, too, because it has the tome idea. Like, I love the every line holds a tale in between, lie 1,000.
but again, it's giving your opponent choices.
Yeah, it actually looks exactly like the Weatherlight symbol, which is the expansion it's from, which is kind of cool too. Now, this next one did a lot of work in the game, and this is totally a Josh Lee Kwai card. It's Crystal Shard.
I love this card.
3-drop artifact. You can pay 3 and tap it, or just blue and tap it. Return target creature to its owner's hand unless its controller pays 1. So it's like 1 mana. Of course, anyone can do that, but it's like, no, you do this to your own creatures if you need to save them for 1.
Yeah, and you just choose not to pay it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Is it exactly Erratic Portal, which is
It's very similar to Erratic Portal. Yeah. It gives you the option of paying colorless for it, which is nice.
Right. I mean, the effect is, I think, the exact same. Maybe
yeah, it is.
The cost is slightly different. But, yeah, and then you can catch them with their pants down where basically if they...
Ever tap out,
you just unsummon a creature for free.
Yeah.
Super powerful effect. But then what you guys were doing, we'll talk about in a little bit, but it actually can go infinite with a Mnemonic Wall.
Yeah.
And what's it called? Extra turn effect.
Extra turn effect in that Mnemonic Wall, yeah. Things were going pretty nutty, basically.
Yeah, that happens.
We had Intuition in there, which is a card I've always wanted to play in Commander, but never have really had the correct deck to do it with, which is 2 and a blue for an instant. You can search your library for 3 cards and reveal them. Target opponent chooses one, you put that into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. So this is great if you want to purposely throw stuff into the yard in decks that have like Genesis or Anger or any of those cards that graveyard matters cards.
Great thing about flavor decks is you're allowed to play a bunch of cards where they would be on the fringe normally, but they are actually like, you know, they're like, well, this is a playable card that I actually can like make an excuse to put in this deck. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which was great. That was definitely like anytime we found one of those cards, we were like, yes, perfect.
This is one I've never seen. It's called Evangelize.
Oh, yeah.
It's 4 and a white. It has buyback 2 and a white. So if you pay the 2 and a white in addition to the 4 and a white, then you get the spell back into your hand after it resolves. It says gain control of target creature of an opponent's choice that he or she controls. So this is, I don't know if you remember the old card from the dark called Preacher,
mm-hmm.
which basically you tap the Preacher, but then they got to choose which of their creatures you got control of. But this is Preacher basically on a spell. Pretty interesting.
Very interesting. We like that too because it's like they could give you their worst creature, or if you're in the right situation, you bounce their thing with Crystal Shard. They only have 1 thing to give you. They have to give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's pretty awesome. And with buyback, it's repeatable. And again, you're giving them the choice, or at least the illusion of choice.
Yeah.
This is actually a decent card.
Yeah, the fact that you can buy it back is really cool. Against a freaking Voltron deck that only has 1 creature out there, this card's a house.
And yeah, it's crazy. It is is the gain control of target creature of an opponent's choice of your control, so it does still target.
It does still target, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I think they have to target it before they give it to you.
Yeah, it's just weird they're targeting your spell, but yeah. I guess otherwise it would get around Hexproof, which it doesn't, unfortunately, because that would be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty sweet. Fight or Flight is the last in the sort of give your opponent's choices. This card's ridiculous. 3 and a white. It's an enchantment. At the beginning of combat on each opponent's turn, separate all creatures that player controls into two piles. Only creatures in the pile of his or her choice can attack this turn.
Yeah, it's there used to be a few cards like this. There was like Raging River or something where you'd have to put your creatures on opposite sides of the river and only one side could do stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is like something they played with for a while. This is an interesting card. Just, again, they have to choose which creatures of yours can attack them, basically.
Yeah, but it gives them the choice, and it can be good, I guess. Actually, the card's pretty weak. I mean, 'cause something's still attacking no matter what.
Yeah, it's hard for you to make plays that make it good, but it once in a while could maybe, I don't even know, whatever. Yeah. This next card... This is the card where this card's actually deceptively good. I think it's playable.
This card's insanely good, especially in 1v1 when you only have to deal with one person's deck.
Especially when you have something that gains you 40 life, which you guys happen to have.
Actually, no, this would be good in multiplayer too because, well, I'll have you read it. This guy.
Yeah, because you don't have to, you're not the only one that would pay, but it can work against you too. So it's Xur's Weirding. It's 3 and a blue for an enchantment. It says players play with their hands revealed. So everybody's hands are available to be seen by everybody else.
Yeah, which is really important for Metamai. He should have perfect knowledge at all times.
If a player would draw a card, he or she reveals it instead. So instead of drawing a card, you just show it to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then any player may pay 2 life. If a player does, you put that card into its owner's graveyard so they don't draw it. Otherwise, if no one pays the 2 life, they draw the card. So... You can basically make stop it so them. No one draws cards anymore if you're just willing to pay the life. This was the card that during the game, it felt like Yul didn't... my guess at the time was like, he doesn't know what that card does and he doesn't want to read it.
Yeah.
Because he had 80 life. And literally, if he just played this, he could just completely be like, you've got 3 cards in your hand. Those are the only cards you have for the rest of the game.
Yeah, because every time you're going to draw a card, I'm just going to force you to discard it.
Yep.
In the multiplayer game, this is crazy because... Let's say if you're at low life, but someone else isn't, and someone else draws a card, the person can be like, oh, I don't want him to have that.
Yep.
So and everyone's going to have a reason to bin a card.
It'll probably be a lot of negotiation. Well, will you pay the 2 life? No, why don't you pay it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This card is a little bit crazy. I've seen it on the table only a couple times, but in the game specifically you guys played, it was extremely powerful because of the amount of life that he had gained.
Yeah, and also at some point we wrecked all of the person's lands, so we could choose. You could just say, like, you're never drawing a land again. You can draw everything else in your deck, but you're never going to get a land again.
Yeah.
We had 2 cards in there, Dichotomancy and Mimeofacture. These cards are not good in EDH because what it is they're essentially cards that let you look through an opponent's deck. We put them in there because Metamai has perfect knowledge and we didn't want something that was super busted. But these cards in general, it's like go through the deck and find a permanent and get rid of it. They're not that powerful anyway because the chances of them drawing that card are just so low. And I'm sure they may tutor for it. But in general, this card's just not that great. And so we wanted to put these in there just so that we could see everything in their card, in their library and be able to search through it. And then that was it. Just
and
the
it was
idea.
On flavor.
It was on flavor, yeah. It was just the idea of getting perfect information.
The next one is a really good card. It's called Future Sight. It's 2 and 3 blue for an enchantment. It says, play with the top card of your library revealed. You may play the top card of your library. It's kind of like Oracle of Moldiah on steroids.
Yeah.
It's more powerful than it looks because what happens is you look at the top card of your library because you basically play with it face up. Let's say it's a land. You play it. Then you flip the next card up. If you can cast that, you cast it. Then you flip the next card up. So it's not just like, I think some people think of it as like 1 extra card per turn. It's not. It could be 10.
Yeah.
Because as long as you can play that top card of your library, then you get to look at the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one.
Yeah.
Super powerful. Very, very strong card.
Yeah. I think people are a little afraid of stuff that says show this, like reveal that card. Because it's like, oh, then they know I have it. It's like, well, you know, you get a lot of extra benefit too if you can play that card. You know, if it's coming off the top from like a Courser of Kruphix or an Oracle of Moldiah or whatever. And Future Sight is sweet. It's totally, that I think is the most on flavor of the total knowledge cards.
Yeah.
Future Sight. It's and literally what Metamai has.
Maybe the most powerful.
Yeah. We knew that this deck needed to be able to go infinite. It's sad, but it's true that if you didn't put it in there, then it would be a flavor fail because the Metamai would not be ageless.
Right.
So we had to have at least a couple of ways to go infinite, but we didn't want to make them super easy. So the main way of doing it that we did in the game is Mnemonic Wall and Crystal Shard and then an extra turn card.
What Mnemonic Wall does, if you don't know, is when it enters the battlefield, you can take an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard, put it into your hand.
Yeah.
So
like
the
an extra turn card.
Yep. So the crystal shard bounces the mnemonic wall back to your hand. You play it. You get a sorcery that gives you an extra turn back to your hand. You play that. It goes to the graveyard. On your extra turn, you bounce the mnemonic wall. Play it, get the extra turn card back,
yeah.
Play the extra turn card. Now we're just in an infinite loop of infinite turns.
Yeah, the only problem is that requires 11 mana, essentially, yeah. to do. And so it's really hard to go infinite and make use of your mana because you need to make sure that you allocate enough to recast the mnemonic wall and the extra turn card.
As soon as you get to 11 mana, though, you do it, and you can just keep doing it, and then you play your lands for turn.
Yeah.
The other player's not going at all. So the only thing that really hung you guys up is the fact that in... Magic Online, which is where you're playing it, that actually takes a lot of your clock.
Yeah, because in a regular game, you could just be like, all right, I've demonstrated the loop. I'm just going to start drawing cards and playing and taking, be like, turn one, you draw a card. It's a land, you get to play it. Turn two, you know. And
yeah, you don't have to retap, put everything in your graveyard, draw it back out. You just go, you know, yeah, exactly.
But you'd have to do that in Modo, and that definitely got a little crazy towards the end there.
Yeah, it that is a... infinite turn lock, though, that is hard to beat.
Yes, very hard to beat. Because if no one's holding up a counterspell, they don't really have any way of interacting with it. And we also had Tamil, the Moon Sage, who was one of the two planeswalkers in the deck, and she also is someone that transgresses time itself. And she was there because her ultimate is you get an emblem with you. You have no maximum hand size, and whenever a card is put into your graveyard from anywhere, you may return it to your hand. So she essentially does what the mnemonic wall is doing. Every time you cast an extra turn card, you just get it back to your hand.
For way
cast it
cheaper.
Again. Yeah, way cheaper. For free, essentially.
I mean, you have to cast the extra turn card, but you don't have to actually bounce your mnemonic wall and cast it again. So you save 6 mana on the exchange. Yeah. That didn't actually happen, but the crystal shard.
It did.
Oh, the Tamiyo thing happened?
Yeah, the Tamiyo ult happened as well as the mnemonic wall thing happened.
Once the Tamiyo ult happened, it was.
Yeah, that's when we knew we could lock it out.
Yeah.
And make it a very uninteractive game for our opponent.
The whole game, unfortunately,
Robert
didn't get to do a whole lot.
He did not. I mean, the thing is, like, the game, they don't, so the judges don't judge your flavor based on how the game goes. So it meant that Yol was like, I'm just going to start taking infinite turns.
Yeah, just start winning.
Yeah, just start winning at any cost.
Listen, everybody who plays on MTGO is thanking you for that because we wanted our free stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
We didn't want no Drown in Sorrow.
Yeah, that's right. And so we had the fun flavor cards. So these cards are not necessarily good, but they're just there purely for flavor.
This first one's good.
This first one's great, actually. It's one of your pet cards.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite cards in EDH. It's Swan Song. I've talked about it a million times. We'll talk about it again. It's a one mana counter spell, but it can only counter an instant sorcery or enchantment, and then it gives a 2/2 flyer to the opponent that you countered their thing. Cost one
text.
Blue. And the flavor text, why don't you read it?
Is Metamai the Ageless saying, the most enlightened mages create beauty from violence. So Metamai was on the flavor text. The card itself is really powerful. It was an auto-include, and the judges loved it.
And it's actually an awesome card.
Yeah. The judges loved it, Josh. There was a point specifically made about, like, I'm so glad you put Swan Song in there. And I was like, yes. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Josh Lee Kwai.
Because I talk about that card all the time. And by the way, if you're running blue decks and you don't have Swan Song in there, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Because here's the thing. Okay, sure, you can't counter a creature, but sometimes that enchantment comes down and wins the game.
So rarely, and there are occasions, don't get me wrong, but very often it is a sorcery or an instant that basically either ices the game or wins it.
Yep.
So either it makes it so you can't win, or it wins. And also, so often it's a counter spell that stops you from winning.
Mm-hmm.
So Swan Song allows you to cast your main spell, but still hold up that one mana to protect it.
Yeah. We also had the Miletus Charlatan, 2 blue for a human wizard. And this card's actually pretty sweet, too. 2 blue, tap it. The controller of target instant or sorcery spell copies it. That player may choose new targets for the copy.
So you just double up all your stuff. Like,
Yeah. And it's Miletus. He's a charlatan. He's totally in line with the flavor and a good card. And then we had the Traveling Philosopher.
This is great, actually.
He's just literally a 2/2 for 2, but is entirely about just flavor because it's one of the 12 oracles or something. Yeah.
Traveling philosophers are always trying to break the riddles of the sphinxes. We know this.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much the deck. There's some crazy bad things in there, like the Guardians of Miletus, which is just a wall.
It's just a 06 wall.
It's just an 06 wall just hanging out. We definitely played it in the game too, which was hilarious. No, I think we actually chucked it from our hand because it was no need for it at some point.
Right.
the big question is, like, if you guys want to build this deck, I would say go for it. This deck was a lot of fun to play. It looked like it was a blast. There's a lot of actual interactivity, and it is fragile, but the commander's powerful. It gets the job done. Things that you would do to make this deck better for multiplayer, just cut all the flavor. So,
how dare you?
I mean, I'm just spitting truth over here.
Just spitting truth. Yeah. I mean, this can be a very strong deck. Anything that's taking extra turns is going to be a strong deck. And
yeah.
And Metamai just does that by just swinging. It's also going to be the kind of deck that as soon as you do that once, you're going to get gunned down. Because people don't like to sit there while you take a bunch of turns.
Yeah, it's very not fun to play against when someone goes infinite.
So what's going to happen with a deck like that, I think, is that people are going to gang up on you, just even though somebody else is playing Narset or something. At least when Narset kills you, it's fairly fast.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is that you can just be like, no, no, it's a flavor-only deck, and then show people, like, look, I'm not going to take an extra turn right now. You can, like, my guy can't even attack. Metamai can't even attack.
Oh, yeah, that was an interesting thing that happened, which is you're taking infinite turns, but on all those turns, Metamai can't attack.
Yeah.
Because Metamai doesn't say he can't attack on the extra turns he creates. It's just any extra turns.
Yeah, which was crazy. At the end of the game, we had like 50 seconds left, and Robert was at 21 life, and we had like some 2/2s on the board, and Metamai couldn't attack. So what we had to do is Yol had to let him have a turn, and then Yol would take his turn and swing.
Right.
And then let him have a turn. And so he was attacking with Metamai still every other turn, but it wasn't just like we're going in the infinite loop, because having the Metamai in the air was actually really good because he had more damage than just the 2/2.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I actually, with 1 minute left, I didn't think you guys had enough time to win.
Me neither. I was like, crap, I'm going
to
get crucified.
You're going to lose to the clock.
Because we're going
to
lose to the clock in a deck that's taking extra turns. Like, everyone's going to hate me. Like,
okay,
we are monsters.
So we're talking about the game. Where you can watch it is you can go to twitch.tv/magic.
Yep.
And under past broadcasts, you'll see the Community Cup. I think it is a highlighted match, but even if it's not there, you can just look on the Community Cup day two.
Yep.
And it's the first... Well, the Iron Root Chef is the first event of day two, and
you can watch us build the deck, and you can watch the commentators talk about it too. Because Marshall actually says, "I want someone to build Metamai," which was awesome.
Yeah, which you built,
yeah.
And then he kind of got all over you for putting in a bunch of extra turns.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't see the rest of the deck list, I guess. hopefully not.
I think he saw the whole thing, but
yeah,
yeah. So it's really fun to watch, and you can watch Jimmy's speech to the judges and watch the judges' reaction.
The defense of the deck and the story it told.
And you can watch. You can just keep watching and watch everybody draft Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. By the time this podcast comes out, people will have drafted it then.
Yeah, that's true. Release weekend will have just happened. For us, pre-release weekend just happened. We should talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we definitely should. So yeah, it's. We'll also include the links, of course, to both Days of the Community Cup and the highlight of the match in the more info box, the show notes, all that good stuff.
All right. I know people are excited to see if they won stuff, so let's announce the winners.
Contest winners!
I forgot about Bing. I always forgot about Bing.
Yeah, well, Google is way better. So, we have winners from three different areas, from YouTube comments, from our email address, and from Twitter. So what we do is I enter in everyone's name just in the numerical list and then go to a number generator and just hit generate six different times. No, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven different times this time.
Jeez, we're giving away a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we have a lot of those intro packs. And so
The contest was we asked what card or cards from Battle for Zendikar you're most excited about, what decks are going into, what combos that you want to pull off or synergies. So we're going to read people's answers.
All right.
So if you hear your name, you won something. You will need to email us your mailing address. You have to email it to commandcast@rocketjump.com. If we don't get your mailing address, we cannot send you your stuff.
Well, in that case, I just get to crack it myself, right? I get to open it myself.
Send it in soon because Jimmy likes to crack. Yeah,
I like to crack packs, man. I don't know where I'm going with that. All right. Anyway, moving on. Our first contest winner is from YouTube. Her name, not sure. Azza Tylee. Make sure you email us. And he or she says, the white and green retreats have a nice home in my Karametra deck. Triggering it 5 or 6 times per turn is nice.
Boy, that seems like it would be good.
That is nice. Yeah, Karametra, if you guys don't know, is a god from the Theros block that lets you cheat in some lands. Very powerful.
The next one is Oscar Robalino says, Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger, Conduit of Ruin, Desolation Twin, Void Winnerer. Wow, that's ambitious.
A lot of them.
All of these are going in my Joyra deck.
Bleh.
Smothering Abomination is going in the Taysa deck. Oh, yeah, Jorah's getting some upgrades for me, too. Jorah's thank you for the tips, Oscar.
Getting some upgrades, yeah. And the Taysa deck, the Smothering Abomination, is a sweet draw outlet. It's a 4-3 Devoid Flyer.
Yep.
And anytime you sacrifice a creature, draw a card. Yep. And the Taysa
deck
he's talking about.
You also have to sack a creature every...
The Taysa deck he's talking about is the one that you can sack three creatures and I believe just exile something, which is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Taysa Orzhov Scion.
Okay, the next is people that emailed us.
Yes, first up, Owen Fisher. My favorite card from Battle for Zendikar is definitely Emiria Shepherd. I especially love the combo with Emiria Shepherd, Earthcraft, Perilous Forays to get all the planes in your deck out.
Yep.
That's right.
Also so, with Sakura Tribe Elder, you can do this.
Yeah, which is crazy. The combos that, I mean, it's a 7-mana card, so you're not going to really see it in standard anytime. But Perilous Forays is like a 3 green-green enchantment. You can tap one to sacrifice a creature, search your library for a land card with a basic land type and put into the play tapped, then shuffle your library. So every time you sack a creature with her, you get to essentially drop one of the things in your library or a graveyard onto the battlefield. Which is super intense. Omnath also, by the way, I think goes infinite with Perilous Forays out. Because every time you sacrifice a land, it deals damage, and then you get to play a land, and then he makes a token, and you
then
can sacrifice that creature.
To do damage.
Although, does the land come in tapped? He doesn't go infinite, but you can mow down a board.
All I know is Perilous Forays is awesome a lot of the time. It's an underplayed card. You should try it out. The next one is Perseus Johnson. The card that I'm looking forward to for Commander is Munda, Ambush Leader. Finally, my ally EDH deck has a commander that allows me to constantly draw into allies. I also am liking Gideon and Ally Encampment. So,
oh, that's cool.
Looks like Perseus is going to do an ally deck. That seems cool.
Yeah, and it's sweet because every Munda just essentially assures that you draw an ally every single turn, pretty much.
And in red-white, it's one of the things that red-white is missing and we always talk about. And we always get yelled at because I know people do like red-white, but I still consider it the weakest of the color combinations.
Yeah.
Because card draw and mana ramp, and this covers card draw. So that's good. Halfway
nice.
There.
Yeah, we got there. We're getting there. Brandon Rains over email said, my wife and I just started playing EDH and we're both really getting into it. I am running mono-red. Yay! Though mostly it's artifacts, Doretti is my commander, and my wife is playing a Voltron, but not really Voltron-y deck with Derevi. We are both really excited about all the full art lands in the new fat packs and the big, huge, colorless creatures.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
We had a couple
you.
People point out the amazing full art lands, and I mean, those are auto-includes in every deck, right?
They better be.
Yeah, they better be.
I got to buy like 20 fat packs for all my decks. It's going to, like, because I need a lot of lands.
You do need a lot of lands.
That's going to be expensive, but it's going to look sweet.
It's going to look super sweet.
All right, from Twitter, we have @DuneEcho says, the combo I want to pull off the most is Anifens of the Foremost with Void Attendant. Sprout Swarm with free buyback has to be good.
Sprout Swarm is a great card.
What is Void Attendant?
Void Attendant is he's a devoid creature that for one in green, you can put a card from an opponent's graveyard or exile into the graveyard and you get a 1/1 Scion.
So you put it from exile into the graveyard. If Anifenza puts it back into exile.
Yes.
Because if it would go into the graveyard from anywhere, it gets exiled. Ooh,
yeah,
Anifenza with
cool,
with the ingest and processing stuff seems really good.
Yeah, my Anifenza token deck is definitely going to get changed
some
around a
processors.
Lot. Yeah, it's going to get some processors. Because I usually never play Anifenza. Now I actually have a reason to do it, which is awesome.
That's annoying, actually.
Yeah, it's super annoying. And finally, our last winner from Twitter, @PearlDiver19, I'm looking forward to Part the Water Veil in my Narset and Ruinous Path in my Tariel. So Part the Water Veil is the new take an extra turn card, and Ruinous Path in Tariel, if you guys don't know what Tariel is, Tariel just came out in the From the Vault, actually. But Ruinous Path is the Awaken sorcery speed, kill a creature or a planeswalker.
Oh, and then turn one of your lands into a dude?
Yeah.
Nice.
So pretty cool.
I don't know the names of all these cards yet. You've played... B4Z a lot more than I have.
B4Z. I like that. B does come before Z, so
yeah,
that is very,
it's not a
that's
lie.
Correct in more than one way.
It's not A to Z, it's B4Z.
Yeah, that's right. All right, congratulations, guys. If you won the contest, make sure you email us your mailing address, commandcast@rocketjump.com, and we will try to get those things out to you as soon as possible. But if I don't get it to you as soon as possible, that means I'm lazy or I'm busy, and I'm sorry, but they're coming. I swear to God. No one has ever not gotten a prize from the show. I'll say that much.
Well, every once in a while something happens and they'll email us and go, hey, where's the prize? And we'll be like, you know, oh, like, we got the wrong address or something. And then we send it out. So
I've had things bounce back from France and stuff. And it's like it goes to a different address sometimes. I'm just like, oh, God, I have to send another one out.
but you will get your prizes. Just be in contact with us. Yeah, give us your address.
I'm a one-man shipping army over here.
All right, time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic. Jimmy, you have something cool.
That's right. All chat, baby. I'm hosting a new show. Not a new show. I'm hosting a show for League of Legends. It's the community-based show. Hey, more community stuff. Called All Chat. They cover all sorts of cool things. It's me, Josh Kim, and James Patterson. You may know him as Riot Dash. He does a lot of the shoutcasting and announcing for coverage whenever they do like Worlds or LCS.
Those guys also play Magic.
They all do play Magic. Josh Kim just started playing Magic.
Played some EDH with him the other night.
Yep. Yeah. Now we have two Joshes.
Hooked him.
We did hook him. He built, actually, one of my first decks. He built Helleva.
Yep.
Jello. So the show comes out. It's already come out. The first episode was last Friday. Very exciting.
What is the show? I know it's about League of Legends, but how does it work?
So we cover, it's basically a talk show kind of, where we cover a lot of community-based art. So if someone like has created new awesome fan art for the game, we cover like a few things, talk about it a little bit. We also do a thing called BM or GG, like bad manners or good game, where we talk about, is something bad or good? So for instance, is being a tryhard a bad or a good thing?
Gotcha.
And it's great because that actually applies to not just League, but also stuff like Magic or any competitive
just
anything.
Gaming.
Yeah, gaming in general, which is cool. So
you get sort of roundtable discussions in there too?
Yeah, it's a lot of like us talking to each other. Like, do you agree, disagree? Lots of laughs. It's sweet. It's kind of, I will say this, the Command Zone has prepared me very well. Just to talk a lot. It's great. I have a lot to attribute to doing this show, and I don't want to stop doing it ever because I feel like I've just been better conversationalists because of it.
Where do we find the show, Jimmy?
All you have to do is go to youtube.com and look up the words All Chat, and it should be the first thing that pops up. It's in a channel called The League Community. So they have like about 40 videos on there, and there's also a lot of funny videos of like flash animations that people have made and stuff. It's really great. It's all there.
And plus, League of Legends is freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's the biggest game in the world. It's really exciting.
Biggest video game in the world.
Magic's the biggest card game in the world.
And a lot of the Riot people, not just the people on All Chat, but a lot of our friends work at Riot, play Magic. In fact, we've drafted with like one of the CEOs of Riot.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're totally into Magic. They're all game designers, tons of cool stuff. If you haven't checked out League of Legends, definitely. I mean, if you haven't checked out League of Legends, then something's wrong.
Something's wrong, yeah. Shout out, of course, to Andy Belford, Patrick Scarborough, and everyone else that we draft and play with over there.
What's up?
Wesley.
Wes.
All right, I'm also going to do an end step because we're only doing one episodes.
Oh my gosh, this is a
this
first
week. So we're doing two end steps. Narcos, have you watched this show?
No, I've seen the posters for it everywhere. It's
on
Netflix, right?
On Netflix, there's a show called Narcos. It's about Pablo Escobar and the sort of early days of the drug trade and the drug war.
Oh,
and it's
very nice.
An awesome show. I'm totally hooked on it. Just started.
Who's Pablo Escobar for those that do not know?
Pablo Escobar was a Colombian drug lord who also was at one point like a congressman and also sort of a revolutionary, sort of the Colombian Robin Hood, if you will. At one time, one of, if not the richest men in the world. We're talking worth like, you know, tens of billions of dollars in the 80s.
Yeah.
Super, super, super rich and powerful. But it also, he and his cartel and his group sort of revolutionized the way that the drug trade really worked in the world.
Wow.
So super interesting. It's about a DEA agent from the U.S. It's about Pablo Escobar. It's about a lot of other characters. It is rated R. So, you know, sorry, Jack Landis, you're probably not ready for that yet. But definitely a very cool
show. He's like,
show.
I play with demons, bro. I'm sacrificing creatures. What's rated R about my card game that I can't race in real life?
Narcos, check it out on Netflix.
Wagner Mora plays Pablo.
Pablo,
yeah. And he was also in Elysium, if you remember.
The guy that plays Pablo is really, really good. In fact, the whole cast is pretty good, but the Pablo guy is super good. And
sweet.
The guy that played Oberyn Martell in Game of Thrones is also one of the main characters.
Pedro. That's awesome. Netflix is killing it, man.
Netflix is killing it.
Gosh, they're killing it.
Yeah. If you don't have Netflix, what are you doing?
Yeah. What are you doing with your life? They're bringing back Black Mirror for a few episodes, too, and stuff. It's great.
They're doing cool stuff.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not just Black Mirror. They're bringing back Mr. Show.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
For a 4-episode run.
Wow.
Very exciting. If you guys like David Cross, what's like one of the OG comedy shows back in the day.
So funny. All right, make sure you check out the Masters of Modern podcast. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman talk about modern and all things competitive Magic. You can follow them on Twitter at TheMMCast, or you can find their podcast at rocketjump.com/TheMMCast.
Yeah, they're right next to us in the podcast tab of Rocket Jump. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Terry. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Cards animations. You can find him at Living Cards MTG. Make sure you guys check out the videos on our channel. They're really cool. Have all sorts of sweet animations.
Plus, you can check out Terry's first video that he ever cut together, and you can give him a shout out and tell him he's doing a good job. Unless he doesn't, then don't say anything.
Terry, why didn't you do a good job?
Terry? I'm sure you'll do fine, Terry. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.